So it's March 3rd, 2012. I'm here today with Christine Jenkins, who I've met with before and have interviewed here in the same room. And I thank you again for coming to talk to me.
You're welcome.
Helping me with my research. And like I told Betty earlier today, it's very beneficial to, you know, my understanding of Kiksati culture, but also working with you always really helped me to grow as a person and to think about the world around me in a different way. So. Yeah. I've made a lot of friends in you guys, and yes. I appreciate it.
So. Yeah, well, we love you, and we appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. So I have this whole list of questions, and don't feel, you know, overwhelmed by them, because we may not get through all of them, and that's fine. It's just kind of to help me lead the conversation, you know, if there's a lull. But feel free to go in as much depth or as little depth as you want on any of the questions. And the first one I have for you is, how familiar do you consider yourself with Tlingit culture, and specifically with the Kiksati clan?
Well, I think I've grown from, as I'm getting older, and I'm hungry to know the knowledge, so... You know, I mean, to have some knowledge of the Tlingit culture, and it just each time when I was working at school that I could do a program, that's when I really would search and find a lot of information that I didn't know at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say from... always knew that I was Native Alaskan Indian, and my dad raised us to be proud of our Indian first, and because I he was German, and but he did raise us to, I never knew my mother, but I loved her dearly, you know, and he instilled that in us. And he raised six kids, and, you know, she died when I was two. Mm-hmm. So it was through him that I knew a little bit about the Kiksati, and I knew I was Indian, and he raised us to be proud. Proud of our culture and proud of who we were. And one of the things that I remember as a child, remember what happened to me as a child. I was riding my bicycle and down the street, and I came across this older Native woman. And she had a kerchief. They all wore their kerchiefs around their head, and she had a long coat on and was walking up the street. Well, there were times when us kids would be together, they scared us, you know, so we'd run away. Well, I was alone riding my bike and going by her, and I said, and my mother's name was Susie, so I always thought her name was Susie for some reason. I don't know why. But I hollered out to her as I was riding by, "Hello, Susie," and rode on by. And I didn't know if she had been drinking, because sometimes, you know, I didn't know if she was drinking or just, I don't know. Because some of the older ladies were, and I think that's why we were afraid of them. And so it wasn't the next day, my dad, I was out playing with my friends, and I'm thinking I was about 10, and he sent my brother after me to come home, and I knew I was in trouble for something, but I didn't know what. And he really scolded me and got after me and punished me for speaking to Mrs. Austin that way. He said, she's Mrs. Austin to you. And you just wouldn't hear of me being disrespectful. So that was a lesson that I learned, you know, early in age. And I carried that thought with me, you know, all the time. So that I think that was one of the things that woke me up to the fact that that I was, you know, I don't know what clan she was, but after that, I think I treated the older, elderly people a lot better.
With more respect.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, ask them if they needed help with anything or, yeah, that was a good lesson I learned.
All right. And did your dad tell you much about your mom?
No, he didn't. Just a few things through, you know, I learned more about her when I got married because my husband would sit and play, they'd play cards at the kitchen table in the evening when he'd come and stop by. And they'd get to talking, my husband would ask him questions and different things would come up about her. Like, I remember him telling him, you know, I'd be working in the kitchen and they'd be playing cards and talking. And I remember hearing him tell my husband about what a good trapper she was. Because my husband went trapping and he'd trap for mink and otter and marten. Mm-hmm. And my dad would tell my husband what a good hunter she was and her trapping that she would do and then her fishing, you know, she'd mm-hmm. go out in the boat and row in front of town and troll for
wow.
salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So and then we had something at home that belonged to her that was it was a long black braid about I don't know how many inches that is, but it was a braid of her hair. And
oh, wow.
And we had that. And my dad had it on top of a cabinet. And I remember climbing up there somehow and getting that and looking at it. And then I was worried my dad was going to come home and find me snooping around. So I put it right back up there. But there was another time, and I loved being around the elders. Marge, her mother was alive. When she was alive, she had asked us to come. Well, Marge invited me along when she was going to meet with these ladies down the A&B Hall, the old A&B Hall that burnt down in, I don't know, it was 53 maybe. But we were down there in the hall, and there was Sadie Campus and Marge's aunt, Aunt Josie, and we all called her Aunt Josie, and some other ladies. Mrs. Lanting, Mrs. Barlow, they were all there. And they were going to sing and teach Marge some songs. So Marge had a tape recorder. And I think we were still in school. I don't think we were in high school yet. And the ladies would sing and somebody was beating the drum and they were singing the songs and Marge was, I was taping them and Marge was singing along with them and trying to learn the songs.
Were they all Kicksetti songs?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if they were all Kicksetti songs, but because I think there were, I know Marge's mother was there, which is, she's Kicksetti. And I don't know what the other tribes were, but, you know, it was at the time when there wasn't a whole lot of people, a whole lot of people in the tribes around. But most of those ladies lived down, they called it kind of Indian town as you go down Shakes Island in that area where my niece Sue lives.
Okay.
Yeah, my grandfather lived in that house. And yeah, so, but they would all get together and have their own little potlucks and eat together.
And you went as often as you could?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be invited. Mm-hmm. In fact, I had mentioned, I was thinking about it one time and I thought, we lived right next door to Charlie Jones, Chief Shakes of, is it he, the sixth, I think.
I believe so.
Chief Shakes the sixth, I think that was the last chief. Anyway, but I used to, we lived next door to them. And this Susie Jones was my mother's midwife and delivered all us kids. So when my dad would maybe be delivering his salmon, not salmon, but he'd get hooligan and smelt, and he'd go with the wheelbarrow and go door to door and sell a bag of hooligan for 25 cents. So he'd take me over to the Joneses next door, and a lot of times I'd fall asleep. They had a great big ground wood stove that they burned wood in, and I'd curl up next to that stove and fall asleep.
It's all warm.
Yeah, so I'd stay there until night, and then my dad would send one of my brothers over to get me and carry me home. Mm-hmm. So, and then I liked being with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, you just felt safe.
So even though your dad was German, you were exposed quite a bit to Indian culture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there was older girls that lived in the house, and they had a room upstairs, and they let me come up there and watch them get ready for a dance. Or they were maybe 10 years older than me.
Was that at the Joneses' house?
Mm-hmm. That was... yeah, they had, and then later on, you know, they were in high school, and I was in grade school, and later on, I was around when they grew up and married, and, you know, but, you know, I was around them.
Do you remember their names?
Uh-huh. May Daly and Glenn Barlow. Glenn is still living. She's, I think she's in her, close to her 90s if she isn't already 90.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Do they live here in town?
They live in town. But May has passed away. And then they had a cousin named Ginger. I didn't know her last name. And in the Pauls, they were related to Charlie Jones.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Just want to make sure that this is recording. It is.
Okay. I don't know. Did I get off of the question?
No, it's totally fine. These are all things that I like to learn about. Mm. Did you know at any point your mother's Tlingit name?
Yes, I did. What happened was one day I went down. I was probably about 26, 27. I went down to the Winnie's Cafe down there, that's the Sticky now.
Oh, okay.
And I went down there, and Marge's brother was there, Herb Bradley. And my age doesn't really matter. I could have been a little older. But he was talking to, he had all his nieces, and Marge was there, his sister, and and they were all, we were just eating pies and drinking coffee, and he started to tell somebody about who was related to who, and somebody asked him a question, and he's so knowledgeable about, I wish he was living. Mm-hmm. I know John Feller, and who's my nephew, and his mother, Carol Brady. They went up and interviewed him, and they taped him. And I don't know who has the tapes, whether Carol has them or not.
I know Marge has a lot of tapes of herbs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they say that, you know, if they're on a tape, they should put it on a CD, so mm-hmm. because the tapes could
fall apart. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I asked Marge about that, but she's, you know, really hesitant to mm-hmm. let them out of her sight. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I should tell you, Ethel Lund, you know her, don't you?
Yes.
Okay. She had tapes done of her grandfather, Tom Ukes, our last carver. And she gave them to Marge, because I think she, I don't know whether Marge was going to make a copy or what, but Marge ended up having somebody put them on a CD, and she still has them.
Okay.
And I think Ethel, and of course she's been here when there's been death in mm-hmm. the family, so she hasn't gotten a chance to get them back from Marge, but I think she wants to share them with Sea Alaska.
Oh, okay.
And if, you know, she should do that. She hasn't. My daughter's, Ethel's goddaughter, so she's going to help Ethel take care of some legal stuff. Mm-hmm. So that she hasn't taken care of. I just got that all done behind me, so.
Yeah, a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah.
So you were at the Stikine.
Oh, and then I happened to ask Herb if he knew my mother's Indian name. So he said, yeah, he did. So he told me her Indian name, and so I claimed it, because I'm her only living daughter now, but at that time my sister was never interested in the culture. I think it was just, she's just at that age where, you know, nobody spoke Tlingit around her. I was young enough that they didn't care if I was there mm-hmm. to speak the language around me when I was over at Jones's Yeah, he told me her Indian name, and then I gave it to my granddaughter that was, she'd come to Wrangell every time, in the summer times, because my daughter and her dad were divorced, so she'd come to Wrangell to be with him when my daughter moved to Juneau, but she stayed with me most of the time, so I took her to JOM. And she did classes, and she learned how to Indian dance. Mm-hmm. And she's the only one that really, at 6 years old, wanted to know the culture. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to know the songs, and she went to classes to learn how to Indian dance and to sing. And 4th of July came, it was a big thing for her to dance in the parade with the JOM kids. And then her dad her dad was here, but her mother flew in from Juneau to watch her dance in the parade. And then, but my mother's Indian name is Kathleen, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, but.
Kathleen?
Mm-hmm.
And do you know what it means?
Well, somebody said something about teaching somebody or, you know, mm-hmm. but I don't really know. Mm-hmm. I think if I talk to, if I see Clarence Jackson again, I'm going to ask him. Because he, when I told him, he says, oh, that sounds like the names that would be in Juneau in their tribe. So
I can, because I was working with Sea Alaska, I can, I have people there that are linguists that can kind of, I can ask them if you'd like.
Okay, I would like.
Yeah, Dick and Nora Dauenhauer.
Oh, I love them. Yeah.
They always help me with translations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool.
When I saw Nora one time, I looked at her and she looked real familiar to me, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't know her that well, just go in and out of Juneau, and I'd seen her before, but she wasn't with her husband, so then I didn't know.
Oh, we saw her at the memorial we went
to.
Yeah,
right. that was nice. And anyway, we were all meeting for some reason there after, I think it was during celebration or something. I think there were a lot of different Native people meeting about an issue. And I looked at her and I said, do I know you? You look familiar. She told me she was Nora Dauenhauer. I thought, oh, shame on me. I should have known who she was. But anyway, yeah, that's how I found out my mother's Indian name. And I thought, I better not forget it.
Yeah. Did you know your grandparents on your mom's side?
No, I just knew about my grandfather. Okay. I think my mother was being... They lived in that house. Actually, when my dad came into the picture and married my mother, it was just a shed. And then he tore it down and built a house there. And my grandfather lived with... Or they lived with him. It was his property and his house.
What was his name?
They told me that he was, I think Herb told me that he was a general, and he was, his name was Tom Coudé.
Tom Coudé.
Mm-hmm. In fact, there's Tom's place down there, and they said that was named after him.
Do you know what clan he was?
No, I don't. Herb would have known. Because he told me about him going down in canoes with some warriors, and they went down and fought with the Tsimsheans in Canada.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. What was your grandmother's name? Do you know?
I don't know what my mother's...
So your mom's maiden name was Coudé?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Susie Coudé.
Susie Coudé. Mm-hmm. And your maiden name?
Is Feller.
Feller.
My dad's name is Feller. Otto Feller was my dad's name.
Oh, neat.
Mm-hmm.
All righty.
Yeah.
So my next question is, what does it mean to you to be Kiksuti?
Well, I feel very proud to be a member of the Kiksuti tribe. And you get the feeling in your heart, it's like it grows as you get older and you understand a lot more, and you're just proud of being a part of that tribe, and especially when you're wearing your regalia and your dancing and singing with them, and then we have some Kiksuti songs now that we sing.
Are those songs that came from the past?
No, there was I'm trying to think of Esther Shea from Ketchikan had she had done this song in memory of her, I think it was her husband, was a member of the Kiksetti. So.
And she was with the Sonia Kwan?
I don't know. Irma. Marge would know.
Okay. I think Marge said that that was her mentor, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I met Esther by, she came to town to teach us moxen making. Mm-hmm. And so I took that class, and I met Esther through them, and I took her clam digging while she was here, and
oh,
she
neat.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Do you know any local Stikeen Kiksetti stories or songs that stick out in your head?
No.
Or that are used today?
No, because, see, I didn't start being interested until I had my granddaughter, Kendra, mm-hmm. to take to JOM, and, you know, and I was so involved with my job at school,
right.
is working with the kids there in their academic things.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was the director there at the school, I start bringing every chance I could when they start having the Native American month, mm-hmm. that we started an assembly, and then along with that I started to do a potlatch.
Oh, neat.
Because I went to Juneau, and a friend of mine, she was a director there in Juneau, doing classes there, and she had. I stayed over, and went to a potlatch that she was having, her students do. So I learned how to do that. So when I came back, I did it with our two third grade classes.
Very cool.
One class. Mm-hmm. honored the other class, and then I brought in elders, and our elders weren't really of the from long ago natives, because mm-hmm. but they were the oldest,
right.
I could bring into the classroom,
and the non-native students participated too, right?
Oh yes, the mm-hmm. whole class did.
Great.
They all made the they had cut out designs where they made a little cardboard necklace, and one tribe gave that to the other tribe. And,
oh, neat.
And then we had food. We had fish eggs mm-hmm. and Indian food and seaweed. And mm-hmm. And then their parents were invited. Mm-hmm. And then I invited the Sentinel. And so we had, you know, the story in the Sentinel.
Right.
And something that was done in the beginning. And then on down the line, those two third grade, and we did it every year.
Mm-hmm.
Then those two third grade teachers retired. And before they retired, though, I think I brought it into the middle school. And I remember the superintendent being there, and he watched, I mean, he was over, his office was over close to the middle school, so he knew those kids, and he was just amazed, and the whole class Indian danced.
Hmm.
And like you say, it was mixed Native and non-Native students, but he was just really surprised to see some of the non-Native students Indian dancing and,
yeah.
and enjoying themselves.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, they didn't feel out of place. Or, in fact, when I was director and would go and speak to the students, I did some culture classes. I'm trying to think of... I did some culture classes and... I'm trying to think of what class it was that I did for 6 weeks. And it was the middle school classes. And I had the kids go home and ask their parents, you know, what nationality they were. Mm-hmm. And I really think they never thought of if there were no Norwegian or what kind of tribe they belonged to, or they never thought to ask their parents. Well, if they didn't, if their parents didn't know, and they had family living, the parents, they never thought to search or thought about who they were, mm-hmm. or what they were, and so they, the students would kind of, you know, kind of pressure their parents to find out, because I would pressure them.
Right.
And then they'd eventually come back, and most all of them would be so disappointed if they weren't Indian.
That would have been me.
Yeah. Huh. And there's one girl here, and I knew her. In fact, her grandfather was very good to me. Mm-hmm. And he was a bus driver here for years. And he would have been surprised to know that his granddaughter wanted to be Indian.
Right? Wow. So I get the impression that, at least with the Kiksuti stories and songs, that mm-hmm. many of them have come in from other places, mm-hmm. from Juneau or Sitka or Ketchikan. Mm-hmm. Do you know of many still existing from that were developed here, passed on from the Kiksuti elders in Wrangell? Or are those pretty well, you know, stored just in history now?
I think it's stored in history. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mostly, you know. Right now I can't even think of one story that I've heard. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've heard, you know, stories, and I've read stories.
Right.
And right now I've been reading stories about the Eskimos.
Oh.
So, mm-hmm. stories that were told through a journal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they had made a book out of it, and they had pictures taken. Oh, so. My mind goes to right. to them right now, but
I have a new friend in Anchorage that's Inupiat, and so I always get him to tell me stories about Barrow. He's from Barrow, about all the stories from the slope. Mm-hmm. Very different culture.
But I read a book when I was doing some courses when we had to take history, mm-hmm. and I read a book on the Yupiks, and they are very interesting people. Mm-hmm.
Right.
That strong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It seems like the stories that I've heard have always been a story that's where the people are kind of suffering, you know. Mm-hmm. And in pictures, they don't look happy, you know.
Yeah.
They're very... very stern and stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. But you know what kind of held a lot of the Native kids together in the tribes and the different tribes together in this town, I think, was the Envy Hall. They used to have a lot of functions down there. Mm-hmm. And they never, ever turned the kids away. They would have their conventions here. We had a nice hall. And they had dances every night. And, you know, the bars closed at midnight, so the dances would last maybe 3 hours. And we had a band, and, you know.
And you said that's where you held the meetings with the ladies, too,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And they taught you to sing.
Right. Right.
So did that all go away after the hall burned?
So it sort of went away after the hall burned. It's, I don't know where it was, like we never met, you know, anymore. And Yeah. And it's just a shame that the whole community, not just the Native people, because it was used by the whole community. Mm-hmm. They had even the Redmond Hall burnt down, and we just didn't have a hall anymore, any large place to go.
Was there ever any consideration of rebuilding?
Oh, yeah. The very first day, people were given money to the Native people to try and think about building a hall. So they got together and they said that's what they were going to do. In fact, all the years that Marge was ANS president, she they were always doing fundraising for, and they've got some CDs still sitting there where they're trying to save for a hall.
Do you think that the tribe and JOM are helping to bring it back? Are they doing a decent job or nothing like it was in the past?
They're doing a decent job. I think they're getting out there more, out into the public, because there are a few kids that are in JOM and they are doing the dancing and things that are non-native, mm-hmm. and they're welcomed, mm-hmm. but they want to learn the culture themselves. I don't know, it just seems like now that it's in the school, they're learning, and the history teacher, Dan Roop, he was honored this last assembly that they had for the Native Awareness Month. Mm. He was honored and recognized because he, in his Alaska history class, he has the students, his whole class, who are mixed, and he has them choose a clan or a tribe to, whether it's Eskimo or, Yupik or Tlingit or Tsimshian, he has them choose a subject that they have to do to learn and bring it back to the class. Mm-hmm. Then they have to do an Alaska map. And it's a neat thing that he's done and continued to do. It wasn't something he just did for a few years. It's been going on for all the time that I was director.
Oh, wow. Is he Native?
No.
Mm.
No.
Great.
Yeah. So he first taught school, I think, in Cake or Craig or on Prince of Wales there somewhere.
Okay.
And so then when he came to Wrangell, it was predominant Native mm-hmm. there. So it was a little different when he came here,
That was one of the reasons that there was no village corporation, right? Because there was a high white population.
Mm-hmm. Mm. I think so. Mm-hmm. We ended up having the IRAs,
right.
And they were getting funding for on grants and stuff to buy boats or
Tlingit and Haida, IRA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The IRA was Tlingit and Haida. Mm-hmm. Actually, now they changed it to, it was IRA, now it's Wrangell, what do they call themselves?
Cooperative
Association? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And when I was on the board, I was on the board for 30 years, I think. Mm-hmm. And that, we were Wrangell Cooperative Association, and we tried to, a couple of times, come up with a different name because we felt like it sounded like a company or something. But I think we I think we wanted to call it Rangelstikine tribe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of the names they came up with. But I think it was Sitka changed theirs just about that time, and they theirs is Sitka tribe. Hmm. Yeah.
Sitka Kwan.
Yeah.
So, what does the frog crest mean to you? How important is that to you, being Kiksuti?
Oh, it's the crest. It's really important, and I'm proud to wear it, and I think it's something you wear with honor. And the crest is, you know, it's like a, it just tells who you are. And people see the frog or the, you know, on the back of your blanket or the back of your vest. Mm-hmm. And they know what tribe you are. Mm-hmm. So, and that's important to have that identification.
Okay. So one of the questions I have, there was something that I was thinking about along those lines of the crest. Oh, what qualities, are there any qualities that you see Kiksuti people having as opposed to those of other clans?
I think we take an extra step in trying to educate the youth. Mm-hmm. I've had people comment to me, you know, do you guys do that in Wrangell? You're so lucky, you know. Mm-hmm. And we don't think about what we're doing till somebody mentions it. Compliments us about what we're doing.
And you think the Kiksuti are taking charge in that effort?
I think so.
Specifically, mm-hmm. the Kiksuti?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. And like my nieces now, they're my brother, he was Kiksuti, and so he's got these children that are, you know, part of him, and they recognize his tribe along with their mother's tribe. Mm-hmm. And Lou and Sue, they do, you know, things for the Kiksuti tribe.
Right.
Because of their dad. Mm-hmm.
So that's an example of a man that is perhaps, you know, takes pride in his culture, right? Mm-hmm. And what was his name?
John Feller.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, you know, I've been around you ladies a lot, but mm-hmm. I don't see around a lot of men that are really culture bearers or mm-hmm. standing up. Do you mm-hmm. do you see that as being the case, or within the Kiksuti?
Yeah, like my nephews, John Feller, mm-hmm. Jr., and their dad passed away when they were quite young. The youngest was in first grade, and my nephew John was 16, 15 or 16 when my brother died. And John was president of the tribe, the WCA. He was president of that tribe for 20 years, I swear, if not longer. I know he was on the board for a long time. He'd still be there if he, you know, didn't feel welcome. He moved away and then came back, and of course he's gone again. He's mm-hmm. not. He lives in Juneau now. Mm-hmm. But he did a. He kind of drew him being the male and being the president, he kind of drew in other people that to belong. So we had some that were nominated into being on the board, where they, as a younger age, they weren't involved. Mm-hmm. And here they were older, and they start getting involved.
Okay. Are there any other men, particularly in Wrangell, that are Kicksuddy that you think are really standing up for the Klan?
I'm trying to think. I don't see any. Mm-hmm. I just see men of different tribes.
Of different. My battery just died. I'm going to change it real quick, so I'll just take a brief break here. Are you doing okay?
Yeah, I'm doing cool. I'm just hoping I'm doing okay.
You're doing great. Thank you so much. My friend.
I feel like I'm going off of the subject that you asked me.
It's great.
Do you have an interview after me?
No. That's all for the day. Mm-hmm. The library closes at 5. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
So I wanted to ask you, when you see frogs, you said you see them sometimes down near your cabin in Tom's place, or around town here. What do you feel anything toward that animal in terms of your cultural connection to it?
I do, because, you know, my kids used to treat them gently when they'd find them and want to play with them and stuff when we were down at the cabin. And after I told you about not seeing them down there anymore, of course, the next time I went down, what do I see but some frogs? Mm-hmm. And Chuck has been building down there, so we went down there quite a bit the last few years. And yeah, it almost seems like you want to protect them when you see them, like there's a connection, to the culture.
Right. Does that kind of inform how you would treat them or teach your kids to treat them?
I think so, because we didn't want the kids to keep them too long, and I remember letting them go, and then, you know, and then the next day the kids would go out to check on them and find out that they were gone, and, you know, it'd make it seem like they just got away.
Yeah.
Instead of us letting them away.
Right.
We didn't want them to, you know, for them to die or something, you know, with them keeping them in a little cage.
And do you think that your ancestors can kind of speak through those animals?
I never thought about that. I don't know. I just never thought about about that.
Have you ever had an experience with an amphibian that sticks out in your mind, with a frog or a salamander, that you felt a special connection, or it was around at an important time of your life? And it's okay if you haven't.
I haven't. I'm trying to think if I have, and I don't recall. Mm-hmm. You know, even when the kids would bring them into the cabin and never thought about it.
How important do you think the live animals are to the Kiksuti today in Wrangell?
How do I feel?
How important are... So if you saw them around town or down at Tom's place, do you think that having those animals still alive here on the island today is important for the Kiksuti?
I think so. I mean, I think about it more now since you've been here and brought it to our attention and stuff. And like I say, I haven't seen them for a number of years because we didn't go down the cabin for there for a while. But yeah, I feel that there's a connection. Mm-hmm. And if I went down there and saw them jumping around, I mean, just like my son, I mean, he wouldn't do anything to harm them. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, he's building down there, and if he runs across them, I mean, he's not gonna to do anything stupid that would harm them in any way.
Right.
He wouldn't think of doing that.
Do you think that if someone did harm them, there would be repercussions? You know, some of the stories talk about, you know, repercussions for harming animals.
You know, I just don't know if there would be a maybe at that moment that somebody might say something, you know.
Right.
If a person saw somebody being, just not taking care of the animals around them, that I think another person would speak up and say something about it.
Do you think that the frog is equally important to the Kiksuti as the raven?
I think so.
Is it? Are frogs equally important to you as the raven?
I think they're more important because, I mean, I'm not out there feeding ravens or, you know, even though I don't see the frog that often, I don't know. I just feel like there's a connection because of, and more important, because I did the design, you know, and on my blanket.
Right.
Had searched a long time to find the right design.
And it took you a long time.
Took me a long time to find one. Yeah. Yeah, because I did find one, and I traced it and was all ready to cut it out, and then I looked at it and it was too modern of a design. It was kind of like abstract design. Even though it was a nice design, I might use it sometime on my vest or on a vest that I might make.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And have you seen that changing? So in the past, you know, the totems and the regalia, like the old blanket that Marge has over at the museum, the way that the frog looks now that people are starting to use on their regalia, has that changed over time?
No. I just thought I'd use this design, the first design that I had, and went to all this trouble to copy it and everything. I used it because it was my niece's son that had done the design. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to, I thought I just wanted to be different. Mm-hmm. But the more I searched and looked around, I kind of lost the feeling after sitting it down for a while. And so I went back to it, and then I start really thinking about, do I really want that, you know, and I didn't feel a connection. And so when I start searching and looking, and then finally seeing seen something that was on, seen a design that I wanted. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew immediately that.
That was the one that you wanted.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, on the order of, the design is kind of on the order of Marge's mother's design.
Right.
Like the old long ago designs that were on the blankets.
Right. And you felt the connection
mm-hmm.
to that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
interesting.
Mm-hmm. And I couldn't to the other one. But I have that design cut out, and I thought, well, maybe I'll use it on something sometime.
Do you think that your ancestors might be influencing how you feel toward?
I never thought about it, but I believe that could have happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you saw a picture of the frogs that you see down at Tom's place, would you recognize them? Do you think?
I don't know. I might.
These are the three native frogs that we have locally.
Oh. Oh. I think it.
See, a lot of people point to the Columbia spotted frog.
Yeah.
Can you tell me why?
I don't know if it's the color. The color and I guess the size and everything.
Did you notice anything about its skin? Was it smooth or bumpy?
It was bumpy.
Okay. So this is a toad, and they tend to have bumpy skin. Do you
really?
Think it could have been similar to this?
Could have been. Is it just because it's lighter, light in color? That
they can be dark and light in color. And it could also be the flash that lightened it up. So you mm-hmm. think it was a bit darker, though, the one that you saw?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a bit darker.
Do you remember if they have this white stripe down their back?
I didn't remember seeing a white stripe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I look at Marge's robe down there, mm-hmm. you notice the white stripe down the middle of the frog on the robe at the museum.
Oh.
And then the bumps on the side kind of mm-hmm. indicating that it was the boreal toad.
Mm-hmm.
And these are what I've seen around the island.
Have you?
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it is possible mm-hmm. that it could be a Columbia spotted frog. However, they're mostly only been found farther up the river.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen any up the river? Any amphibians when you've gone up there? Frogs or salamanders?
We have when we'd been at the cabin, but...
Oh, you have a cabin up there too?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I haven't been there for years, but I went there when the grandkids were little, and I didn't go look at them close. I mean, the kids just running after them and tried to catch them. Yeah.
Have you seen any salamanders around?
No, I haven't. I haven't been anywhere where they're, you know, where I might see them.
So when you've gone up the river, you know, there's a lot of old village sites up there and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Do you feel any connection to the river because of your family having been from Wrangell?
No. Well, I did through my husband and my kids, mm-hmm. you know, because they go up there a lot mm-hmm. and they hunt up there. And my two sons, they've grown, they grew up being around the river. Right. They went with my husband more than I did. He worked up for the Forest Service, mm-hmm. so he spent time up there. And one year he took our son that was Chuck, he's the oldest son, and took him up there. And he ran his own boat. I don't know if I told you that. Mm-hmm. Well, my husband would go up there for 10 days at a time, and then he agreed to, they had a program, and I can't remember now what they called it, but they had a program for the youth, and the Forest Service would take have my husband take up 3 to 4 kids when he'd go up there and work on the cabins, mm-hmm. or work on a project clearing trails and stuff like that. And these kids would get paid to do it.
Oh, neat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And my husband would take them along and he'd cook for them and, you know, mm-hmm. and he would be their boss and tell them what to do and how to do work. And they let my son go up, but he had to go in his own boat. And he had to...
Because the other boat was full?
Or? No, because he couldn't be a part of the group, but he had his own little Boston Whaler.
Oh.
So he wasn't really... He worked with the kids and stuff, and the kids were... At one time, asked my husband about Chuck getting special privileges and stuff like that. And he said, he's not getting any special privileges. He said, he's here because he wants to learn, mm-hmm. but he wasn't getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
He wasn't getting paid like the rest of the kids were. He was just there learning and so then they start treating him differently then, mm-hmm. you know. So, anyway, I feel a connection through them because they, you know, went right. up there a lot.
So the connection is more modern than it is, mm-hmm. you know, ancestral.
Yeah, right. And if you go up there, you'll see, I don't know if it's a plaque, but it has a story about who built the cabin and mm. stuff and have my husband's name up there.
Oh, neat. Mm-hmm. Is it a Forest Service cabin?
Mm-hmm.
Or, okay. Mm-hmm. And you guys have your own cabin up there?
Yeah.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
We should
well,
go up sometime.
We don't, yeah, we don't have a cabin, but we have a tent frame. We had a cabin, mm-hmm. more or less. They don't allow you to have, you know, they lease the property. But if they build a cabin, they'd have to take it down. They have to take it down every year.
Oh.
And so what they do is they put up a tent frame,
mm-hmm.
And they cover it with Visqueen and tarp and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, but they have to take it down every year. So one son wants to build a float house, so they don't have to take it down.
And
yeah,
it down.
Oh, wow. It gets to be a pain, a lot of times, you know, you think, oh, we'll come back and do it, and then the weather gets bad, and you don't. You've got to get up there and. Take it down because then the Forest Service will just take it down for you.
Mm-hmm.
And probably not take it down so you could use the material. Again, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. Go and you haven't seen frogs up there when you've been traveling mm-hmm. on the river?
No. Uh-uh. No. I went up there with Tammy when they went up there for the fish camp.
Oh. On Farm Island?
Uh-huh. Not last year, but the year before.
Mm-hmm.
I'd sure like to go up there again this year.
Yeah.
I don't know if she's going to be able to do that mm-hmm. this year, but I think her mom and dad go up there. I probably could go up with them.
Neat. I'm actually going to go up in May.
Are you?
In late May. Yeah, we're going up to the hot springs and to Twin Lakes and a few of the different areas that were sampled before for mm-hmm. frogs, just to look to see if they're there or not. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I've never been mm-hmm. on the river yet, so. It should be fun.
Yeah, you'll enjoy that.
Yeah. So I think that we've covered most of my questions.
Oh, great.
But, you know, I just want to give you a chance if there's anything else that you want to say about being Kiksuti or the Kiksuti clan. Whatever your feelings are, if you can share them with me, you know, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, what time is it getting to be?
It is 4:30.
4:30. I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Well, I learned a lot.
Did you?
I did. I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
I'm glad I took the time. I was thinking I had... I'm trying to not think that, you know, get too involved with think and skip out on things that I'd like to do and think I have to do this over here first before I can. So, like, I had thought about going to that chili feed. You know, I've gone the last couple of years.
Right.
And I enjoy it. Did you stay for the auction?
I was there for most of it.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you?
Yeah,
it's cool. And
Dawn got a bunch. She got a fishing pole and new tile for her floor. And there's just not enough time in the day, right?
I know. But I was just thinking, I didn't eat lunch today, so feeling kind of, I don't know, my...
Need some sugar, some glucose.
I need something,
Right. Okay.
So I think I better go have something to eat.
Let me get, I'll just turn these off and we'll do the honorary.